with the Marriott in Monroeville, and I'm going to be doing the entertainment naturally. And what I thought I would do would be to interview people who I remembered from Alderdice, and who had gone to Roosevelt with me. And I started to tell you that when we lived on Flemington Street, I would go down Murray Avenue to Hazelwood, where they past the Giant Eagle, past Lilac, past the B'nai Immuna, cross over this tremendous intersection, which is still the world's worst mm-hmm. intersection at Browns Road. Cross over, and in those days, there was still an awful lot of traffic. Go up Beechwood Boulevard. On the right-hand side, there was a little church that had been made into a two schoolrooms, 4B and 4A. So I spent 1 year in 4B and 4A, and I would not only walk there in the morning, but go home for lunch and walk back for lunch and then walk home again. And my mother didn't think anything of it. I mean, you know, she'd say, watch how you cross the street. You could have gotten Geharget. I mean, there was cars coming from Malazite, you know, running in every direction. And I remember crossing with the little kids. We would sort of cross on the bias and then go all the way down Beechwood Boulevard. We'd go home a different way, be all the way down Beechwood, and then back up to Murray, up Lilac to Murray. And I can remember that one little episode was really funny. The Pesach, because Pesach would be next Monday. I would go home, which I got a nickel, which was like a big deal. And I went in, and it was a drugstore, which is still there, and I bought a Clark bar. And I ate the Clark bar, and it was so delicious. And then one of the kids said to me, Esther, you're eating hummus. I forgot it was Pesach, and oh, I was sure I was going to, I'd never go to heaven. I came home crying, and my mother said, why are you crying? Oh, I ate Clark bar. She said, don't worry, don't tell Dad, and it'll be all right, you know. But the things that I recall, some of the people that I have a marvelous picture of us standing on the steps of Roosevelt School, which is now the Giant Eagle on Lilac, and some of the same people are now coming into my living room 50 years, more than 50 years That's later, because these people are, I graduated Alderdice when I was 16, and I think I'm one of the youngest. I'll be 67 in April, and some of these people are already 68, and the women look amazingly great, most of them, and the guys, some of them, like Frank Friedman, look fantastic. A few look like they are old people, but in the main, I would say they're a very good-looking group. We have over 200 reservations, and people are coming from California, however, and it's wonderful because the memories are very still very vivid of teachers and the classes. As a matter of fact, I see Rose Hartz, who's unfortunately suffering from Alzheimer's, but she was a young woman. She still lives on Forbes Street, and she was one of my teachers. And I see this one woman all the time who said that since I was so poor in arithmetic, I would never amount to anything. And I looked at her and I said, well, even though I couldn't add, I've done all right. A great deal of satisfaction. I know everybody in Pittsburgh, and they tease me about running for mayor because I guess I've entertained so many hundreds of times I couldn't even begin to tell you. I had an interesting thing happen this past month. I was hired to entertain in Greensburg at a college club. And over the past 15 years, I would say most of the groups I do are non-Jewish. And so but people still love dialect stories. And so this woman called me and she said, I hear you're coming to Greensburg. And she said, I'm not saying they're anti-Semitic, but they're very waspish. And I don't know how they would take to your humor. And I'm Jewish, and I just thought I would warn you. And I didn't even ask her name. She volunteered her name. And I said, don't worry about it. I said, I think as a Jew, I'm very conscious of my Jewishness. Excuse me. Yeah.
What's your name?
Cats. Very consciousness of my Jewishness and very sensitive to how Gentile Christian people would feel about me. And I can say in all truth it was one of the biggest successes I've ever had. They literally embraced me. I got a standing ovation, and I think she was too embarrassed to come up to me. I don't know which one she was. But I don't try to hide my Jewishness with my audiences. I do. I'm very much myself. And I feel that maybe I've been a credit to maybe to many of these people that I'm one of the first Jewish people they've ever met or had a conversation with or seen as an entertainer up close, because I do a great deal of traveling. And I'm very famous in the tri-state, Aliquippa, Bambridge, and Youngstown. I've gone very far. But for somebody who hasn't, it's more of an avocation than a vocation, I've had a great deal of success in having people really recognize my talent and be wonderfully supportive and appreciative of what I do. And you can't measure that in dollars
right.
and cents.
What did you do for fun and recreation as you were growing up?
Oh, we much of what the kids do today. We played ball. We played hide and seek. We had roller skated. I had all the things. I went to Emma Farm when I was 8. It was $8 a week, and I know it was very difficult for my parents to come up with that $8. But I went to this to camp. I remember vividly what Emma Farm looked like,
which is the predecessor of the JCC in
Harmony.
Harmony.
Jewish Community
Center.
It was in Harmony. And my father in the little Chevy driving me down and staying a week, and I didn't think I'd make it through the week. I was so homesick. And we did very much of what the kids do today. We went to the movies every Saturday. And I lied a lot about when I was 12, I said I was 10. I was so tall, they thought when I was 8 that I would have to pay full price. And We went to each other's homes, all smoked cigarettes. That was the biggie. And if you didn't smoke, you weren't sophisticated. I was probably one of the only people that never smoked, because all the kids I knew, all the people that I grew up with, we would sit on each other's porches and smoke cigarettes. That was a big thing. When I was little and we lived on Flemington Street, 8, 9 years old, we would sell lemonade on the street, and make fudge, play games, and till dark. It was very much what the same thing my kids did on Bartlett Street.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after school, I'd go to Cheder, and I would, Sunday school, you were very busy in the homework, and there was no television, of course, so you had to make your own. You read, and parents were very in a lot of books and a lot of discussion. My father would not sit down to dinner unless we were all at the table. And he demanded a great deal of respect. We waited till my father sat down. My father did not ever want a paper napkin. He would say, "I don't care what you serve me, but it has to be presented attractively, and I like a linen napkin." My father-in-law was the same way. And my mother always set a nice table, and after dinner we would listen to the radio. We had very special programs. Sean Dew, the magician, I mean, I couldn't wait till I got home after school to... And then movies were a very big thing. Going to movies on Saturday was a very big thing.
You seemed blessed with ill, with good health. Have you always?
Yeah, thank God. I had one thing that was interesting. I had we lived on Flemington Street, and we got new awnings from Gimbel's. And I was very interested, always very interested in other people. I've always been very outgoing. Talked to the guys that were putting up the awnings, and we lived on a terrace. It was a garage underneath, and it was a very windy day in May. I looked up, and the guy dropped his hammer on my face, knocked out my front teeth. And my mother thought my beauty was ruined. The teeth were capped in those days. That's been 60 years ago, I guess. And that was about 58 years ago. And it was amazing. I was always terrified of the dentist and the doctor, but that, and I had my appendix out when I was 17 at the Montefiore. I had my tonsils out when I was 7. We lived on Ward Street, and I remember having the tonsils out in the old Montefiore Hospital up on the hill off of Center Avenue. I can remember everything about that operation, and even coming home to Ward Street, my mother giving me ice cream. But the funny thing, before that, I had diphtheria. And I had a mild case. And there is a Dr. Bloom who still lives on Fernwald Road. He must be 85. I saw him the other day. He's got the same face. He's a little man. And I said, "Dr. Bloom, you took care of me when I was 7 years old. I had diphtheria." And he knew the name Schwartz, and I remember my sister Lil in particular, she was shuggy, crazy about paper dolls. And in those days, when you had diphtheria, they put a sign, or scarlet fever, many people died of it. And you had to burn everything after it was person recovered. So my mother, in order to keep me happy and quiet, gave me all my sister Lil's paper dolls, a collection that she had in boxes. And Lily was hysterical because after I got better, they all had to be burned. But I remember this vividly. There was a boy by the name of Kaminsky. His sister Florence is married to Judge Nate Schwartz. And he got diphtheria the same time I did. We were both in the first grade, and he died. And his mother would never talk to my mother again. She felt that I was totally to blame. And who knows? I mean, there were five or six of us that got diphtheria. And later on, and many years later, I got to know Florence very well. But I always, every time I see her, I think about that. Also, polio. I remember walking down Ward Street, and there were people that had polio. You were terrified, as you are of AIDS today. You would cross the street when someone had polio. There's always somebody that died of polio, iron lung, and it was terrifying. But thank God, I was fine. When I was 17, I had my appendix out. And then the next time I was in the hospital was when I had my two daughters, both of them born in the Montefiore. Maxine was the last child, one of the last children to be born in the maternity ward because they no longer have maternity at Montefiore.
Tell us about your meeting your husband and the courtship.
Saul's background was very similar to mine. He came from rather orthodox family. They belonged to B'nai Israel. His father was in the real estate business, and his mother was a homemaker. Father was crazy about dogs. He had about 9 dogs. Max Lapidus was in the real estate business, and when my family found out I was marrying Max's son, Saul, there was not only celebration that finally I was getting married at 27, but that he was a very wealthy young man and came from a rich family. Little did they know Max had more sores than my father. And that the year that we were married, lost everything and had borscht. Saul had to look for another job. That's why we started the travel agency. He had just gotten back from the army, and it was a blind date. And I wasn't the most popular girl on the block, but my height. I wouldn't go out with a guy unless if he was shorter. And it was war years. And
Would they want to go out with you?
Yeah, it seems like I always attracted smaller men. Now it's fashionable, L.A. law. The guy's married to a woman that's towers over him. But during the war years, the girls got together a lot. There weren't too many men around. I worked at the Y, serving breakfast on Sunday to the guys who were in AST. They were in the medical corps stationed at the University of Pittsburgh. They were dental school or whatever. They had a big group of Army personnel stationed at the University of Pittsburgh and housing around there. And
Why was this?
The Y on Belfield.
Oh, the Y.
So every Sunday you would go over there and Y and WHA and serve breakfast. And it wasn't that I was so patriotic. Or like their breakfast. I was hoping to meet a guy, and I would date a lot of the guys. That's how I met a lot of the guys. I worked for USO. I would go to schlep down to the Pennsylvania Railroad Station and dance with all the guys. You know, came out of the train station. And I would entertain. I had an act, and I did the act at the USO at the Y. I was very popular during the war. This all came out of the service, and there was a girl by the name of Bebe Shapiro, who I knew from the Y, and one day she said to me, "There's this guy that you got to meet." She said, "He's so funny, and has a whimsical sense of humor, and he'd like you." So she fixed the date. I worked at Kaufman's, and I got dressed to the nines. I had a snood on, and a fake fur coat, black dress. And this guy comes to the door. We lived on Whiteman Street in the Parkway Apartments. I opened the door, and I thought, "Jeez, oh my God!" He needed a shave. He had an old schleppadick and old corduroy jacket on. He looked and he said to me, "My God, you're tall." And I said, "Thanks." He said, "Why don't you take that? Where are you going all dressed up?" He said, "I'm not taking you to the Chatterbox. We're going to go to Joe Mazur's." So we went down to Joe Mazur's, which was on Washington Boulevard. And we had a great time. We laughed and we got along Well, he never called me. I never saw him again. A year went by. I forgot all about him. And I was standing on Baum Boulevard, in front of the Murdoch Chevrolet place. I had a girlfriend by the name of Trudy Deutsch who sold cosmetics with me. She was gorgeous. I'd meet a guy and he'd meet her and he'd turn away from me and ask her out. She would go. Real good friend. Anyway, I slept with her when her mother was out of town. I stayed at her apartment. And I was standing on the corner waiting for the bus. And this old Plymouth pulled up to the bus stop. And the guy looked me out of the window. He said, "You're going to town, Schwartz?" And I figured if he knew my name, I must know him. I said, "Yes." I got in the car and was Saul Lapidus. And I said, "Nice to see you again." I wouldn't have even known him. And he said, "You want to go out to dinner?" Well, I almost fell over, and I said, "Sure." Well, that began the romance that was to last until 1948. He liked me, but he didn't want to make any commitment. And you didn't live together in those days, you know. It's just not hard enough. So I dated a lot of other guys, but I always liked Saul. Matter of fact, I liked him so much then I was so discouraged about his not wanting to get married that I went to California, stayed there 6 months with friends, came back, and he was glad to see me, but he still didn't want to get married. And then in May of 1948, the thing happened to me that changed my entire life. I got a job through a recommendation at somebody said I was a terrific comedian, and what I like to work at the Concord. I'd never even heard of it. And I took a chance. I packed all of my clothes. My mother and dad looked at me like I was crazy. And they said, "Where are you going?" And I said, I'm going to get this job in the Catskills. I took two buses, one to New York and then one to Kiamisha Lake, New York. It took me a day and a half to get there. And I saw this place and I knew that I was going to get that job. I didn't know that there were five other young women who wanted the job as a social, on the social staff. And old man Winerick, who owned Jarrah's Hair Tonic, owned the Concord, multimillionaire, and he took a liking to me. And they put me in, not in the hotel, but they put me up across the road in a cochelaine. You know what a cochelaine is? Mm-hmm. Well, in Pittsburgh you didn't know about, but in New York you did. These were boarding houses all along the Catskills. Tremendous boarding houses. And each family would have a room, and they would share a common kitchen, and you cooked alone, cochelaine. And the husbands would come up on the weekends. Well, when I saw that, I didn't think I'd want to stay, but he said, old man, when Eric said, "Esther, give it a chance, you stay, we see what we can do." And by the third day, I knew that I had the job. It was pouring rain, and I had those people that were disgusted because they couldn't play golf or tennis. I had them laughing. I would sit them in a circle and tell them stories. And so anyhow, by the end of the third day, Arthur Winerick had pretty much decided on me. But his wife was not sold. She kept saying, "Arthur, she doesn't play the piano." He said, "It's all right. She tells a good story. She'll be fine." But we take her, we take her. He gave me $35 a week. And the only advice he gave me was, "Esther, we like you. You stay here, you have a job permanent. Stay out of everybody's bed. We had a last girl here, had your job. She made $500 a week. She was a whore." We'll talk another time.
On that note.
On that note, we'll stop till next time.
Oh, that's terrific.
It's Wednesday morning, August 26th, 1987. This is part two of an interview with Esther Lapidus. Present are Judy Rubenstein, Judy Palkovitz, and Esther Lapidus in Esther's Dining Room. Lapidus, we're doing part two of an interview that was started before Pesach. Present are Judy Rubenstein, Judy Palkovitz, and Esther Lapidus.
When we finished our last interview, which was before Pesach, four months ago, you were talking about your upcoming 50th high school reunion. Mm-hmm. Would you tell us about it?
Taylor Alderdice, class of 1937. We had about, I guess, a minimum of 12 or 14 meetings at my home here on Bartlett Street. And we would get anywhere from 20 to 25 people
And seemed like forever to get going, but turned out to be a wonderful affair. It was held at the Marriott in Monroeville. And they had over 300 people attending, the spouses as well as people who graduated. I would say that 90% of them I had never seen before. They seemed to be total strangers to me, because there were two classes, February and June. And I knew some of the, of course, people who were in my home room. Some I had seen in the halls 50 years ago, but that's a long time.
Had you not had any reunions?
Oh, yeah, we were sort of an offbeat class. We had a 22nd, and we had a 37. Really weird times. Yeah, I had seen, but most of the people that I had seen were seemed familiar to, a lot of them were very familiar to me. They belonged to Temple Sinai, the man who was in charge of the reunion, along with his wife, Nate Safian, and Frieda Diamond Safian, had been high school sweethearts, and they were really the push of the whole reunion. There was a guy by the name of Frank Friedman who I would have married, except that I got too tall for him. We were high school sweethearts, and I grew up. And we remained very
Judy good. And I don't understand that.
Yeah, and we've remained good friends all through these years. I see him, he and his wife, quite frequently. But and there were people around Squirrel Hill. I've lived in Squirrel Hill since I was 9 years old, 1929. So I had seen a lot of these people. I knew a lot of them to say hello to, and a lot of them were acquaintances. But my advantage was that I was the entertainment. So I did a show, and it was a tremendous thing, because I had researched some of the people. I had a lot of notes, and when I was told who these people were, I remembered things about them, and I had been told things about them, so they were hysterical. And there were a few people that I knew, I'd seen over the years, that I really put on, and I got a standing ovation. It was really funny. I wrote a song about the difference between 1937 and 1987. We were so naive. We really were. It was a different...
Can you sing it for us now? Do you remember it?
Oh, no. I have it upstairs. I read it off the paper. But we were really very naive. It was a thing about we didn't know about the pill. 1937, we didn't know about the pill. We thought a pill was an aspirin, and we you know, the difference. And we thought that the drugs were at the Marfield Pharmacy. You had no idea about. And it was just a really very lovely evening. And I don't know whether I'd want to do it again. It's you feel sad when you see some of the people. Some of them look very ill. Some of them have aged terribly. Others look like time has stood still for them. They are so remarkably fit and look so attractive. And a few I recognized immediately. There was one boy by the name of Arthur. What the hell's his name? Well, I remembered him immediately. But he looked like we were together in the fourth grade. He had the same little face. And his father was a doctor, and he married a classmate. And there was a girl by the name of Esther Markison who married a classmate. He became a rabbi, and she looked just like she did 50 years ago, except that she had a few lines in her face. She was still very slim and very trim, and so that's amazing. Really was an interesting experience, but also, as I say, sad, because you feel that you're coming into the twilight, as it were, of your years. And there are days that I feel very young, and especially when I'm entertaining, I feel very rich and young, that I have had all these wonderful experiences as an entertainer. And there are other times when you feel, gosh, being 67 years old is old. But when 67 in 1937 was old.
Mm-hmm.
But 67 in 1987, you feel that you see, I have a brother that's 81 that he looks like he did when he was 60. So he's very productive and very... and a remarkable kind of thing with age. Mm-hmm. If you're well, if you're lucky enough to have your health and a good face left, of course. Oh, incidentally, there were a lot of Jewish women who had facelifts, and you can tell, because there's a certain look, there's a certain tightness, you know. I think the most amazing thing was you lose a little bit of the expression in your face, but the most amazing thing was how many blondes there were. Who were, as I remember, had very dark hair, as dark as mine. They were the minority were the grayheads like myself, who I've been gray since I was about 26, 27. But remarkably, there were very few gray-haired people. The Jewish women in the main seemed to look very, very good, very well preserved, if I can use that word. It was funny, at the 35th reunion, a lot of women had gained a lot of weight, 37th, gained a lot of weight. But by the 50th, they had reverted to their trim, you know, where they're getting interested in the, as I say, we didn't know in 1937 about cholesterol, and, mm-hmm. and we used to eat Gribenis and schmaltz, and my mother, the more schmaltz that's contained in the mashed potatoes, the better they were. Now everybody's so weight conscious and so face conscious and so appearance conscious. But for what it's worth, a lot of the men do not age as well as women in many cases. But that's supposed to be not true, that the women show their age more. But the men looked very paunchy, many of them, and very, you know, very bald. And so I think women have really come into their own in the last 50 years, considering their looks and so forth, mm-hmm. being very aware of how they look.
Did many of these women work during the years that you know, or was it just more in common to stay at home?
Well, you know, when I was a girl, it was the be-all and the end-all, too, after you got through college, to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Very few women worked, unless they had a family business, unless their husband, they would work along with their husbands. But I really couldn't say. I mean, I went to work right after school, but I wanted to get married. That was it. I mean, you had a home and children. That was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a complete turnaround in the late 60s with many women. Now to a point that I feel is kind of sick. We have neighbors who have, you almost have to have two incomes to get along today, which was different than when I was first married. You seem to be able, the standard of living was, things were a little easier. They have babies, people in my neighborhood have babies, and when they're 3 months old, put them in daycare. And I see a very big change in this child who lives nearby. Put him in daycare when he was 3 months old. His mother is a computer operator. Makes about $40,000 a year. She's a manager. And this child is kind of a loner. I mean, I think it has a definite effect on the children. The second baby is also, she had a second mm-hmm. baby 2 years later, and at 3 months put the baby in daycare and resumed her position. I don't know how good. I think that the first couple of years are very important if you're going to have children. But as you girls know, as you women know, there's a tremendous trend for husband and wife to be working, and they want a lifestyle that almost calls for two incomes. I mean, you know, two cars, a better home, better furniture, belonging to the club. All these things are very mm-hmm. important to not only Jewish women but to women in general. They want more. They want clothes. They want all the good things mm-hmm. that the extra income will provide. It has to have some effect on the children.
I also wondered, because the women were so well preserved, if they spent as much time on themselves. You know, that worked sometimes didn't have all that time to do that.
I think it depends on the women. You can't generalize. I mean, yep. Some women are very concerned with their appearance, always mm-hmm. have been. Others couldn't care less. Mm-hmm. I have one daughter that couldn't care less about how she looks, mm-hmm. and the other one is very concerned about her appearance.
Your class bridges an interesting 50 years, aside from the fact that everything is an interesting 50 years, mm-hmm. but because of 37 being really just as we were, just before the war,
right.
just before the end of the Depression,
right.
just before the Revolution, and so many different things.
Right.
You're not a social historian, but do you find in your class they tend to be, to have stayed married to the same people?
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the kinds of things, when you take a look at the class that assembled, even though you don't remember a lot of them, did they tended to...
There were a lot of long marriages, yeah. Mm-hmm. There were a few divorces, but you rarely heard about teenage pregnancy. There were a couple of girls that dropped out of school, and... You were so naive, you didn't know why, or their mothers would say they had another child. I mean, there were two instances that I knew of. But most of the people that I saw there had very long marriages. One man, who I didn't recognize at all, who I knew from the time we were in the fourth grade, big burly hulk of a man, Bill Frick, came over to me and he said, why didn't I take you out in high school? He said, why didn't I know that you could, you know, that you were this or that or the other thing? And I said, oh, I'm sure you're very happily married, Bill. He said, I've been married 3 times. He said, I'm looking for number 4. So, you know, there were many in the class that were divorced, and there were an awful lot of widows. I noticed there were a lot of women alone whose mates had died at an early age. Some had remarried, but I think in the main, I would say that the marriages tend to stay together. There were many long marriages, much longer than mine. I married rather late. I was almost 28 when I got married. But in those days, I was an old maid. I mean, most girls got married immediately out of college, many of them out of high school, and had children by the time they were, had maybe 3-4 children by the time they were 24, 25.
Did many of the people move away from this area?
Many, yes. But there were, you know, there were a percentage that had stayed in Pittsburgh. We had them from as far away as Hawaii and California, and we had quite a few that couldn't make the reunion but had sent in notes. I had some lovely letters from people who said they would have loved to come for maybe many reasons, financially or because of health reasons, couldn't make it. But I thought that the turnout was great considering it was 50 years. I'm doing a show. Somebody heard about the thing that I did, and I'm doing a show for the 60th high school reunion of Shelley High School on October the 10th. So,
do you have any idea what percentage of your class no longer is alive?
Yeah, if I had known you were going to ask so many questions about that, I could give you the book that we have upstairs that lists the deceased. I think it's about a quarter of the class. That's good.